I am a nervous wreck. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Roberta Schick. And my friend Jody, who I came up with, she said, you will feel a power in here. And I do. And I, you know, people say things to you sometimes, and you know, until you experience it, you really don't know what it means. When I walked into this meeting tonight, I felt that power, and I know what that power is today. I know that power because of Alcoholics Anonymous. That power for me is love. And I felt that in this room when I walked in. And I'm not usually a crier. I could go there right now. But I'm not going to do that because I only have this and I already blew my nose in it and wiped my eyes. So I'm going to try to keep my composure up here. The other miracle besides love, because to me love is a miracle and love is a direct connection with God, and that means I need to stay here and I'm in the right place when I'm with you all. I never felt that anywhere else. I never felt that in my home, in my family, and I'm not a victim, and I'm not, like, blaming anyone. It's just, we just didn't have that there. But I feel that here, and I feel that with the women in my life. And I feel that today with my men friends, too, who I never knew how to have a men friend. I never knew how, and I hated women. I used to look at women and I'd say, I hate her. And I envied her because she got up and went to work and came home and took care of her kids and they played at the playground and I was over in the corner with a bottle of wine and I hated her and my son was being raised by my mother and this lady is carrying herself well and, you know, and I hated her. And what it was I found out through Alcoholics Anonymous and God working the steps, getting to that honesty, peeling the onion back, I hated myself. Because if I feel that way towards another human being, I really feel that way towards myself. And I get it today. I get it. And I can honestly say I love women. I love the women. I love the women in my life. The women in my life taught me how to be honest. And the women in my life taught me how to grow up. And the women in my life taught me how to be a woman. And I never knew how to be that. So the answer for me was getting to love women and getting to know women and letting women in. Because somebody told me a long time ago, the guys will pad your behind. The women are save it. And I used to come to meetings. And the guys, I went to the football games with the guys, and because I was one of the guys. When I drank out there, I was one of the guys. It wasn't like it was anything sexual going on or any romance. It was with the guys. And I was, and I got attention from the guys, you know. And when I came in here, I sat in the back of the room with all the guys, and I'd go to the football games and all that at the houses with all the guys and hang out with all the guys, and I was afraid of the women. I was afraid of the truth. I was afraid of the truth. And it was honestly, it was so, when somebody said that to me, they will pad your behind, the women will save it. And today I know what that means. I know, because I could still work a guy. I mean, we can work them. I mean, they're really not that bright. And that's no offense, because I have some very dear men friends. My buddy Leo's babysitting my dogs at my house. I have guys that are like my brothers, but for real, I won't say this to them, but I can work them. My sobriety date is May 11th, 1988. My first meeting was when I was 15 years old, and that was probably 73. I was washed up at the age of 15. I was washed up. And it's funny because I read the 24-hour book every day. I read that book every day, and I have God Calling book too. My sponsor got me. And I didn't read it today because I was discombobulated because Leo, my buddy, stayed over, who was babysitting my dogs because I made him stay over so he could get the routine. Because if you're like me and you know you have dogs, my dogs each have a couch. They have a TV. They get fed like peanut butter wheat bread at certain times. Hey, I'm single and my dogs are like, hey. So he stayed over because I said, you better stay over Thursday night because you need to know their routine in the morning. Told you we can work them. So I was discombobulated because Leo was there. And my book was sitting there where I meditate every morning. And I kept looking at it and thinking, I need to get to my book. Long story short, I was doing all kind of things and I didn't. It was on faith. Dolly read it. Faith. And it said, I no longer have a mouth full of ashes. Well, on the way up, I was sharing with Jody and my friend Lisa. When I was little, it was funny because we were talking about sobriety and the obsession to drink and the compulsion once you take that first one, you can't stop. We were talking about that, and I said, when I was writing my fourth step, obsession came up for me. The first thing that came up was, I was obsessed with licking ashtrays when I was 3 years old. And that was in the thing tonight. And I used to sneak them behind the couch. But all the later that I did with the booze, the sneaking, the lying, the stealing. And by the way, they're salty. That's all. They're just salty. Now, some people are sitting out there like, they're just salty. Hey, I didn't eat dirt. I know a lot of you ate dirt. But... the whole routine that later came with the booze was there. I'd look around. I was 3-4 years old. I'd look around. Nobody looking. Snatch the ashtray. Run behind a thing. Lick the ashtray. Mother would go like this. Fear. Were you eating ashes again? I'd like it. Mouth all black. The lying, the whole routine came. And I can remember like thinking, how can I get that ashtray over there? So however this alcoholism started, it doesn't matter, but I could tell you I had the isms way before the actual booze. And here she took me to the doctor, said, the girl eats ashes. The doctor said, you know what, she must be lacking salt. Kids will go towards whatever they're lacking. And you know what's funny today? I told Jody and him, I don't use salt on any of my food today. I don't somehow just naturally lost the taste for it. So let me tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I was never right, as you probably know that by now. And that's a minor story. I was the youngest of four children. My mother had me at 40 years old. She was not ready to have another child. She thought she got her first job as she was one of the first women hired as a school guard in the city of Pittsburgh. She was very proud of that. Boom, she finds out she's pregnant. She's pissed. She had to quit her job as a school guard. She never let me forget that till she passed away when she was 88 years old. If I brought you into my house, she said, you know, I had to quit my job as a school guard to have her. You know how much the school guards make today? I knew how much the school guards made. I knew their benefits, and I was this big. So my brother and sisters flew the coop at an early age. My dad was a city of Pittsburgh policeman, and there was never any talk. Nobody talked in the house. Nobody talked. And that's just the way we are. We're still like that today. Nobody talks. It's funny. It's really weird. But anyways, so I was home. I fantasized a lot, and I made up a lot of things. And then you know, I was always I wanted attention, but terrified of it. Wanted attention, terrified of it. We'd go to yard parties. We were row houses, and cyclone fences separated the yards, and all the families had yard parties. They had paper streamers and lights and a record player in the yard. And I remember this like it was yesterday. And we'd go to the yard party. The adults would be up dancing. And I, as a little kid like this, would go around when they were, I had all the sneak, would go around to the tables and finish the highballs. I loved the taste of alcohol, and I drank for effect back then. I remember I loved getting dizzy. I loved it. Now that's not normal. That's not normal. And my mother would carry me home. And my dad would be getting off his shift, and my dad was on to, he knew, my mother, and he'd say, my mother would go, I don't know what's the matter with her. She must have got sick, ate something at the party. My dad said, she's loaded. My mother would go, what are you, loaded? You know, but I loved the taste of alcohol, and I drank it whenever I could. I drank my dad's drink whenever I could. I just drank. I loved to drink. He came home loaded a few times. I would be scared because he would be different. He would be mean and hollering, and he was not like that otherwise. And I would run up the steps and hide, but yet the curiosity. I would stand at the top of the step, and I would listen. There was something. I was fearful of it, but I was curious. Fearful, curious. And then when I was 11 years old, the first professional drunk happened. We were babysitting for a girl in the alley. She had two little boys. Well, she was a lady. And then she looked very nice in the daytime, dressed very nicely, carried herself well. As soon as her husband left for work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever time it was, she would put on the mini skirt, the hip high boots, tease her ear up real high, put the makeup on, the big earrings, low cut top. Her favorite song was Love the One You're With, and she was my idol. And she bought us, I'll never forget that night. You know, it's something when you can remember those drinks. And I can't remember what I wore yesterday, but I can remember the whole scene. I can smell it. I can remember it. And I can taste it like it was yesterday. And she bought five Boone's Farms apple or strawberry. And we invited all the boys in the neighborhood in. And they were passing it around. And the boys bought some other stuff. And they were passing and everything around, and I grabbed that quart, and that was mine. That's how I drank. That was mine. And I guzzled that quart. I told you, I drank for effect, and I passed out. I broke her table. That's unmanageability. That's unmanageability. It's unmanageability. First professional drunk out there with my buddies, and it was totally unmanageable. They carried me home. They laid me on the steps. They knocked on the door and ran because my dad was a cop. Long story short, the very next time that I could get out and do it again, I did. I couldn't wait. I was totally obsessed off the bat. I was obsessed. I wanted more. I wanted more. I didn't care about the consequences. I became rebellious. My father didn't know what to do with me. He no longer scared me. I wasn't scared. I had a goal. I wanted this. I wanted more. And I did. And I start running wild at the age of 11. I'm 13 years old. I'm Don Butler Street in Lawrenceville. I look across. I see a boy. They say, he's the bad boy. Don't go near him. Stay away from him. I looked at him. He looked at me. He ran past me, rubbed a banana popsicle across my neck. I went, I love him. And I snuck him up in the back while my mom and dad was in there watching Bill Burns. I snuck him in the back kitchen seat. I was a sneak, a liar. It just came natural to me. It just came as natural as breathing air. I snuck him in the back door, up to the attic, didn't know how to have babies. 9 months later, I had a baby. I was 14 years old. No idea. I didn't even know how women's bodies worked then. Nobody talked to me ever about it. We just didn't talk about that stuff in my house. My skirts are getting tighter. They forced me. They thought maybe if we put her in a Catholic all-girls school, something will happen. They put me in a Catholic all-girls school. Here, every girl in that school ended up going to the penitentiary, being a drug addict or alcoholic. Pregnant, you know, and the little nuns walked around. But anyways, I went to school. I was pregnant. Sad. When I started working on sobriety, and when I started to see how my self-centered and selfishness and just the whole, just a ball of like just disease affected the people in my life that loved me. It's sad. And I believe my sobriety really began when I started to see how it affected everybody else. You know, of course, in the beginning, it was all about me, how it affected me. And then somewhere down the line, through working the steps and making amends, and boy, I'll tell you, start seeing how it affected everybody around me. And it just rips me up today because I work in the field, and I work with women, and I see women, and I see the little kids, and I just think, So anyway, I have this baby. I think he's a baby doll. And I'm running around and every day. I quit school. I just ran the streets every day. I don't have any job stories because I never worked. I drank every day. I blacked out almost every day. I woke up beat up a lot. I woke up on railroad tracks. I woke up, believe this, in the swamps of Lake Okeechobee, in Alligator Alley. When I go. And I don't ever want to go there again, one day at a time. This has been not only a lifesaver, this has been a miracle in my life, a miracle. I had nobody at the end because I didn't want anybody in my life. I hated myself. I left my mother raise my son. I never stopped for a minute to say, here, you feel like putting your life on hold for 18 years and take care of him and put him through school while I run around the country? You feel like doing it? I never said. I just left. I never called. I just left. I forgot about everybody else, and I ran for me. And I was looking for something that I didn't even know what I was looking for. And I wound up in the most craziest places with the craziest people. And I mean, it just blows my mind. There was a fella, Joe Zaraka. He picked me up on a corner when I was 15 years old. He took me to Lawrenceville Group Thursday night AA meeting. That's how bad I looked at 15. I walked into that meeting and I felt immediate fear. I felt so scared because folks was looking at each other in the eye. They were laughing. They were talking. Their eyes were bright. They were lit. They were smiling. That was like Mars to me. It was like Mars. They said, don't take the first one. Look, here's what I used to hear after it filtered through this sickness here. Don't drink the third day. I mean, so I know, and I work with a lot of women that come in off the streets, and I know they can't hear me. I know what they will see, and they watch like I did, actions, because I remember them taking me to meetings, and those words that they said could not filter through this sickness up here. It's mental, physical, and spiritual, and this mental is where it starts, even today. Even today, it starts here. It centers in the mind. But anyway, that's why I have to stay connected to you. Because you keep me in the truth. Not this truth. This almost killed me. I need you. I need you. Anyways, I wound up with nothing. I mean, I'm nothing. I did nothing with my life. Nothing. Nothing. I was like a big blur. I went to your house. I never left until you put me out. And you can usually tell. You can usually tell when they're getting sick of you. You know, they're starting to get like looking at you like, but I'm not going anywhere. See, because in here, I live here now. Now, this might be a problem. I drove your car and smashed them and left them in the ditch in the side of the road and wouldn't call you and tell you where your car is. I just moved on to somebody else. I fell in love, I told you. He'd go to the penitentiary. I was, cry for 5 minutes and then look across the bar and fall in love again. A series of, like, horrible relationships. Horrible. Look at each other across the park in San Francisco. We make eye contact and float to each other. He's got zigzag scars across his face. He has 6 different names. We wind up fist fighting. One time I begged my mother, always call collect. Now she hasn't heard from me 2 years. Call collect. Collect call. Would you please pay for the bus ticket to get me home? I'm in California. I got 2 black eyes. Blah, blah, blah. So she went down, paid for the $55 anywhere you want to go special with the Greyhound ticket, jumped on. I had to hide, leave, run out of town, because Richard with the zigzag face, who's also named was his Zeus and everything else, was looking for me. And I jump on the bus and I get in. I don't have no money. She just paid for the ticket. I have no money. It's freezing cold. We're in the Nevada mountains. My clothes are ripped. I got two like baseball for eyes. I have no food. I'm going to be on the bus 3 days. And a nun sits beside me and gives me her sweater and feeds me all the way home. And I thought nothing of that back then. I thought I got over on her. Today I know God sends angels. God takes care of fools and babies. I know that. And that happened over and over and over and over again in my story. Somebody always came by and saved me. I don't know their name. I wouldn't know her if I saw her today. But every night I thank God for them. The folks that came by and he sent the life preserver, and that was them. And I thank God. I was such a fool then and so selfish and self-centered that I didn't know that. I was sick. I was a sick alcoholic and I couldn't see that. I couldn't see the beauty in the world. I couldn't see the kindness in the world. I couldn't see the love in the world. I couldn't see friends. I couldn't see any of that. Here's what I lived in. Resentment, blame, anger, jealousy, envy. That's what I lived in. That's what alcoholism is. And that was, I was like explosive inside. And alcohol started not to work anymore. And I was down in fifths of vodka. Just down in them with Valiums, handful, 10 Valiums. I don't even know how many because you forget how many you eat because I call them forget-me-nots. Because you eat five of them and 10 minutes later you think you're not feeling anything. So you eat 10 more. Well, if 10 don't work, let me eat 10 more. And then you down them with a fifth of vodka and then you wake up somewhere again, and I was humiliated and I was ashamed. I started to feel that humiliation and shame. I started to feel degradation. My son was a star baseball player. My mother put him through school. My mother went to all his games. My mother, who when I got sober, I, the selfish, self-centered alcoholic, had a resentment with my mother because it centers up here, and I had it all twisted and turned up the wrong way, and I had a resentment towards my mother thinking she's trying to take my son off me. That's how crazy. That's how crazy. And then when I began to let God in, like the book said tonight, the 24-hour book, and I began to let that in, and I began to let the solution in, and through sponsorship and working with a sponsor, and every day on my knees saying that third step prayer, things started to happen, and this started to shift a little. And it started to like scare me a little bit. There was an awkward period in early sobriety. I was like, whoa. You know, this is weird, man. I want to be nice to people. I'm excited about going and making the coffee. I'm proud of my coffee table over there. I'm greeting people at the door. I mean, it was like an out-of-body experience. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. I'm calling her. I mean, that was just so, I mean, just so against the grain for me. So against the grain. So there was an awkward period. I was like floating. Like, what's going on here? You know, but it felt good, but it felt scary. What's going on here? And then I remember the first time I cried. Oh, I hadn't cried probably in like 15, 20 years. I was frozen. I was frozen. And I remember people would cry at little funerals and things that I was going to in AA, and people was crying. I'm thinking, wimps. Wait. But really, I was scared I was going to cry. I couldn't cry where I came from. You didn't sit there, ooh. You know, it was like, whoa. And things were stirring up inside. And then I remember I started asking God, please help me to feel. My sponsor gave me a feeling sheet, and I was keeping a journal. Because here's what, how do you feel? Fine. How do you feel? Good. Good. How you? And I didn't, so she gave me a feeling sheet with the little faces. And I had my journal, and I would write, I feel joyful. And I would get so excited, I would call my sponsor, I feel joyful. Believe me, I was a piece of work. Look, I know that. Look, I know Alcoholics Anonymous can do huge miracles in people's lives. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But it always happens. It always happens. If you work for it, always happens. And I wanted this. Here's what happened to me. Okay, let's get to the end here. Nothing. I had nothing in my life. I got married once. Here's how I got married. I had a buddy. You know, that's all I ever had was buddies. I come home from California. This time I didn't have two black eyes. I think I came home all in pretty much one piece. Didn't go home to see my family or my mother or my son. I ran up some friend's house up in Penn Avenue, Garfield. And we're drinking and we're doing other things. And there's my buddy there, Chucky. And I said, now by now I'm looking for fixes. By now I've been through a million detoxes. By now, I've been through a million rehabs. Mind you, I'm the junior therapist in rehab. I sit right next to him, the therapist, and I just look around like he does. I look at him, see what he's doing. I do what he does. I start telling everybody else how they need to fix their lives. And I did. I would tell them, I'm going to take you to an AA meeting. You need help. And I brought a lot of people to meetings. And there's some women that are still sober today. Like 15 years sober more than me. You know? And I would say, these people will help you here. They're very good people. I'll see you later. Because I convinced myself I am unconstitutionally incapable of being honest with myself. All the meetings I went to, all the readings I heard, centers in the mind, I grabbed onto that line and I said, that's me. And they would see me out on the street and say, when are you going to come to me? I'm constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself. I'm telling you, when I hear myself tell my story, I go, my God, that girl was sick. Thank God you saved her. Thank God. Thank God. I would BS the therapist, the psychiatrist. I knew how to just work all them. I knew the words. I knew the language. I knew to tell them what they wanted to hear. I would sit there, look at them, and try to figure out, what's he want me to say next? And I would just, like, give them a big line, and I would have them crying, feeling sorry for me. And I was just, like, brutal. And what happened was, everybody just cut me off. Mom, they say, when mom gives up on you, you must really be bad. My dad gave up on me. He didn't speak to me 10 years before he passed. Yep, that's something you have to live with. But through Alcoholics Anonymous, I am able to. And I don't carry that heavy guilt and shame anymore. I carry a little bit of, hey, reality, if I chose to drink again, this was what I'd be doing to somebody else's life today. And I don't have to hurt any more people today. And that's a big relief off my back. Because I don't ever want to hurt people the way I hurt them before. What happened, he quit talking to me. My mother had my son. Now, in my mind, remember where that is, I'm thinking my son's like 6 years old. He's 6 years old. He's 15 now. Forgot to tell you real quick about Chucky. We took a jitney to Larm. I said, Chuck, why don't we get married? Maybe that'll help us. He went, okay, Bert. A couple days later, we took a jitney to Larmer Avenue and got married in the Magistrate Tibbs' office. I have pictures of it. I mean, that's how we got married. Here's how crazy I had my mother. She made us a cake and had a party at the house. They were all hoping that this would change her. And needless to say, it didn't. What happened was I went to the house. This was one of the turning points. Went to the house. Knocked on a door, tried to get my mother's attention. My son answered the door. He said, we don't want you here anymore. I'm starting to feel this stuff out there now. Over the booze isn't working anymore. I feel like I'm speeding when I'm drinking now. It's not working. I can't sleep. I can't eat. It's not working. Nothing's working anymore. I'm feeling this stuff now. I'm trying to make eye contact with my mother. She's like this. She can't even look up. My son told me to leave. I walked out. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. I walked down Lawrenceville. I was by myself. I felt that hole. I felt that spiritual hole, that emptiness. Mental, you know how that affected me. Spiritually, it was always a hole in my gut. Nothing ever filled it. Nothing. Nothing. You would ask me, am I praying? I would look at you like I looked at my mother and said about the ashes. I would look at you and say, yeah, I pray. I'm thinking in my mind, why do they keep asking me that? Why do they keep asking me that? A little while later, I wind up getting arrested. Nothing new, nothing new. This time I get arrested, I feel a sense of relief. It's the first time I ever felt relief. First time. Go to the jail. I've been in there a million times. It's old home week. Everybody's hollering, hey, ready to play cards, watch a movie, whatever. I'm sick. I'm sick. I'm physically sick. The hole in my soul is this big. Nothing's filling it. I'm feeling the shame, the remorse, the degradation, the guilt. Nothing's working. Booze isn't fixing it anymore. I'm at the end of the road, the jumping off place. I'm going to hang myself in a cell. And I figured out how much heat I would need to keep my feet up off the floor. And I felt a second sense of relief. It's going to be over. It's going to be over. I was like, thank God. I'm getting ready to hang myself. All of a sudden, another alcoholic I hear in the room like he's next to me, and I thought I was hallucinating, which wasn't anything new. But he said, you do not have to live this way. You do not have to live this way. Do not take the first one. Ask God for help. And I got up off that cot, and for the first time in my life, I got down on my knees. After all those years of lying to you, I got down on my knees, and I didn't know any prayers. But I said the best prayer anybody could ever say. I said, whoever you are, help me. And all of a sudden, I'm like that. I got that zapped. I got hit. This feeling came over me, this peace and this warmth. And I didn't know what it was because I didn't have my feeling sheet yet. But it embraced me. It embraced me. And when I talk about it, I still feel that. I still feel that today. Almost 25 years later, I still feel that. I was saved. And the next thing that came into my mind through him next to me, who was not really next to me, was, you need God, you need Alcoholics Anonymous, and you are going to be all right. And it was I knew it intuitively. And then the next opportunity that I got was like 9 months later. But in the meantime, I start getting a hold of women. I start calling women. They start sending me books. Sent me the big book. Sent me the meditation book, the 24-hour book. They start sending me books. They start sending me cards. I started to feel, I knew I was a part of you. I knew, I felt it. I felt the love coming. And I got on my knees every morning. I found the book in there, the big book. And I looked up the third step prayer. I couldn't jumble, the big book words were jumbled to me. But I found the third step prayer. And that was the only thing that made sense. And I wrote the third step prayer down, and I kept trying a game like to memorize the third step prayer. And I memorized the third step prayer. And I started saying that every morning, and every night I said, thank you. And the day I got out of there, I ran to a meeting. And that meeting I joined as a home group. And I got a sponsor. And I remember that day, this was all in one day, I said, I'm ready for these steps. I am ready. I am ready. Because I knew I had more than an alcohol problem. I knew I had a living problem. And I knew I was selfish and self-centered. And I wanted to start making things right. And I didn't make that up on my own. Because of my own making and thinking, I would have never thought of anything like that. That was coming to me intuitively, and I was ready. And I started asking for help, and I went to the predecessors and the folks that were here before me, and I said, I need help. I want to stay sober. I want to live sober. I want to be a good person. I want to help my mother. I want to help my son. And they said, come on, this is what you do. See that coffee pot over there? Here's how you make coffee. Start making it. Get up here an hour before your home group. Put the coffee on. Set the chairs up. Clean those. See those cups and ashtrays? They got miracles under them. Clean up them cups and ashtrays. They got miracles under them. And I was diving for the cups and ashtrays. I was making the coffee. And you know what? They were so kind to me. I know I made that coffee like tar. But they would say, good cup of coffee, Roberta. And I just felt so good because I was giving. You were teaching me how to give. You were teaching me the greatest miracle of all. And I didn't know it, because if you would have told me that, I'd have ran. But little by little, you started exposing me to love. and you showed me through your actions how to give. And I just kept coming and kept coming and kept learning. And I was like a sponge and open the book and talk on the phone at night about the book and talk about the meeting today and the speaker and just running and getting involved and standing at the door. And I remember my friend Billy said, "You think you have a problem today? Go stand at that door and greet people coming in." And I said, "How does that work?" He said, "Just do it." So I went and I did it, and handshake three people, I forgot my problem. And little by little, things started, and I started caring about people, and I started being there for my mother. And through working the steps, I was able to start, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. When I started writing, and I saw that everything I thought that wasn't. And everything that I thought wasn't, was. And it just became so clear to me. Just so clear to me. The truth just became so clear. That I was responsible. I was responsible. Nobody else. And then you taught me about resentments. On how to rid myself of resentments. And I was ready to hear you when you said, pray for them. Pray for their health, happiness, and prosperity. Do it for 2 weeks. Even if you don't want it for them, do it anyway. And you will be free. And I did it. I said, I don't understand this, but I'm doing it because I want what you have. I want what you have. I stopped questioning. You gave me the paragraph on acceptance. Major solution for me. I have that posted in my office. When I am disturbed. When I am disturbed. There's something wrong with me. I mean, I live my life gritting on you. That it was your fault, you did this, and I hate you, and if you'd have did it this way, and you should have took care of me, and, you know, when I am disturbed, it's me. Something's going on. You taught me how to spot check, how to stop a minute, bring God in it. Help me, and check myself. Am I fearful? Am I being selfish? Do I want what I want when I want it right now all the time? Am I doing that right now? Am I envious? Am I jealous right now? Am I distrustful? Just little things. I mean, just beautiful solutions here. I mean, I lay my head on the pillow at night and I go to sleep. I just go to sleep. My sponsor is wonderful. I love my sponsor. She easy does it. Let go, let God. You know, just when I just need to hear it, I'll just call her and it first things first, Roberta, and sometimes that's you. Because I'll have a tendency to run myself ragged. And I had to learn how to balance that out here too. I need prayer and meditation time. I need to sit still with God. I need to let the thing I always say sometimes my insides like that snow shaker. I need to let it settle. I just need to settle it. And the only way I can do that is prayer and meditation. You taught me how to understand rather than seek to be understood. What a solution. What a solution. I tortured myself with all that blaming and this and that and victim, I'm the victim. And that was torture. I mean, I have peace. And it comes through giving it away. And I love what the big book says about that and working with others. It's not about the giving, it's about when and how to give. And I had to learn when and how to give. Because when I first got sober, I didn't know when and how to give. I was bringing them off the street, staying in the house, make them breakfast. You're going to read the big book, and we're going to pray. And here's, you're going to go to meetings, and you're going to stay sober. And I didn't know how, when, and how to give. And then I'm mad again, and I'm hating everybody because this one drank. Then this one had the audacity to drink in my house. I want to beat her up. When and how to give. And I learned that through taking care of myself and nurturing that God box in here. See, this God box, if it's not fed and it's not rested, it just doesn't work right. It doesn't work right. And you taught me how to feed and rest my God box. And then I'm able to give. You cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass. I mean, that tells it all right there. I had to get my relationship with Him right. I had to get the relationship with me right. And I did that with you. You gave it to me, and then I can pass it on. And I know today, I'm not bragging, I know when and how to give. I don't carry the alcoholic anymore. I don't carry them on my back anymore. I remember I had to go through the journey to get to the appreciation and to get to the gratefulness of God's gift in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am grateful, and I love this thing. I love this thing. And I could never repay Alcoholics Anonymous. I could never repay here. Never. I was able to take care of my mother the last 10 years of her life. What a gift. What a gift. She ended up, you know, and we're their favorites. You know, we are. We're their favorites. And my sisters and them knew that. I'm her favorite. We are. And I love my mother. We took her on vacations with all of us. She'd be in the middle of all of us at the beach. And when she passed, I was there. They said they didn't have room for her at the place to put her, and it was across the street from my house. And I look over, and God said, "Oh yes, we do have a bed for her. Oh yes, we do have a bed, and we have a bed for her right across from Roberta's living room." I could look out my living room and looked over to her room, and I was running over, and people, my friends came and sat with my mother when I was working. My friends came. And all the all time, the resentments want to rob me of the miracle all the time. Resentments are the ones that crop up. I'm with my sisters, they don't come down. Nobody's doing. Now it's dawn on me. I got to go get her prescriptions. I got to do this. I got to go to work. I got to go clean her up. I got to do this. I got to help her. They don't do nothing. You know, that's how, you know, I don't care how long we're here. I think that's how we think, at least me. First thought wrong, that's how I am. So then my mother passes, and I'm there. I am with my mother. I'm with my mother. And we were like this. We were like this. And my son, we were with my mother. What a gift. And my mother says, She had a stroke. She couldn't talk. My son was over there. They called me up. We were taking shifts. Called me up. He goes, put the phone by. This is Mommy. Mommy's on the phone, Graham. Mommy's on the phone. And she said, I love you. I love you. And she never said that. We just don't say that in my house. And then she passed. I didn't know how to do funerals. Where do I come? I come to you. How do you do funeral? What do you do? What should I do? How do I do this? What do I do? Okay, go down to arrange the funeral. Come. Everybody came. Everybody came. She wanted the laid out in red silk pajamas. I ran and got her red silk pajamas. Typical hunky Polish woman. That's what she said. She said, I want my red pajamas. She told me that all the time. I went and got her red silk pajamas. She was in them with the big white buttons. And everybody opened the door up. Who's the first folks in? Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous. The first ones in, the last to leave. They were there all day. They didn't just come and say, hey, guy, bye. They sat down. Then my son, who's a cop, then all his cops were there. So we got AA. We got the police. Doesn't stop there. We got all my friends from in the neighborhood that are still drinking and still using other stuff that were in my mother's house over the years. And they remember, and they're there. So we got the using folks. We got AA. We got the police. Somebody said, look, cops and robbers. Okay, it's the greatest show on earth. It's the greatest show on earth. Doesn't feel like it all the time. But all I had to do when those storms come is hold on. Don't take the first one. Go to a meeting. Call my sponsor. Get down on my knees and ask God for help. And it passed. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that that passed. I never let it pass before. I felt it and I was gone. I never sat still and let it pass. And that's the medicine. Don't pick up. Get on my knees and ask God for help. Call my sponsor. Get to a meeting, and it passes. Doesn't mean that everything's going to feel good all the time. I like all the feelings now. I like being a crybaby now. I like crying. Sometimes I sit at home by myself. I'll light the candles up. And it feels good. I feel alive. When I wasn't feeling anything, I was dead. I was dead. And I remember Dot saying, you could see the light in your eyes today, Roberta. The light is in your eyes. You can see it. You're alive. You're alive. I work in the field. I bought my own home. These things, I'm not saying that that's what you get here, but I just been able to work consistently for 20 some years and able to save little money and able to buy my own little home and able to take care of a couple dogs and friends once in a while that need a place and come on over. I'm able to do those things. I've been able to do that. I could never do that. I never wanted that stuff. I was okay in a boxcar. I never wanted that stuff. I vacationed today. Me and Jody do vacations. We do a couple times a year. I love vacations. Vacation. I love the new person. And I always look for the new person. My sponsor taught me, you look for that new person coming in and you help them to feel good about this meeting tonight. You let them leave here with a good feeling about this meeting tonight. So I scan the room all the time. And you know who they are. They got that look coming in. Like, who's these bunch of weirdos? Because they're coming from something so foreign. Or they're scared. They're scared. So I asked a girl to come over, and I'm going to close with this. Come on over to our table. Sit down. Come on. We'll get her a cup of coffee. Get the meeting list. You know, where are you from? Start circling meetings. Here's where we go. Here where we'll be here tomorrow. Here's a pass the book around. Write your numbers on it. You know, help her feel good. Don't come on too strong. It depends on how they are. Some folks get scared. You don't want to scare them. Because you know I need that. That charges my battery. Sometimes I get a little overzealous. She's mine. So the girl come in. I said, come on, sit with us. Sit with us. And luckily she was like outgoing a little, you know, so she came up. Yeah. She talked like it, you know, so I knew she's right up my alley. We hit it off. Great. So long story short, I become her sponsor. So a couple months later now, we're working steps and praying together and blah, blah, blah. And ex-fiance comes in the rooms. You know, she's staying sober. So then she comes to me and she says, he has two condos in Aruba. He wants to take me down to Aruba. We go down there all the time. She says, but I'm scared because and she permits me to tell this story. I'm scared because every time we go to Aruba, we fist fight and go to, we drink, we fist fight, we go to Aruba jail. So I know that story. I mean, I know it. It's the same story with me, but down on Butler Street, you know. So I say, see, I learned that too, when and how to give. I do not give answers because I've had this. Well, she said it's her fault. She told me, or they run home and tell their husbands, which you didn't even say anything about their husband. Yeah, Roberta doesn't like you. She told me to leave you. You know. So when and how to give. So I say, I'm learning now. I say, whoa, looks like you have to make a decision. I said, here's how my sponsor taught me to make a decision. Write a pro-con list. Pray about it. Talk to your little close friends about it. Do some reading, meditate, do your little inventory, you know. I said, and then you'll be guided to your own answer. She says, okay. See, that's the best thing my sponsor did for me, taught me how to make decisions. Because I didn't know how to make them. I wanted everybody to make them for me. So she comes to my home group the following week. She goes, I made the decision. I went, this is great. You made, because that's big. That's big. She said, I did the pro-con list. I wrote, I talked to friends that know us both. And I said, what's the decision? She says, I decided, and I already told him, that I will go to Aruba. He has to take my sponsor. I went. said, "That's great." "Wow, that's a great decision." I said, I can't believe it. She goes, "Well, we hope you don't mind. You'll be in your own condo." I went, "Oh no, I like my own condo." And then, you know, I took it a step further. "Can I bring Patty, my friend from Al-Anon?" She went, "Sure." I said, "Oh, what? We wound up in Aruba." The moral of the story is, be nice to the new person. You may wind up in Aruba.